Right. Just getting started talking to Peter today. Thanks so much for being here and agreeing to share your story with us. Just to get started, we like to ask folks how they first became involved with the gay community or started engaging with gay life.
I came out in Calgary, Alberta, of all places. Once I left home at 16, I don't know, I just always attracted to men and never asked why or just one of those things. And so I never had to fight myself in that sense. I'm gay, I'm HIV, and I've come around. Now that I'm 60, I'm more relaxed, but somewhat relaxed. But Calgary, Alberta, I just happened naturally, if that's possible. And that's possible, but it was a word. But yeah, so that's that. Is there any other questions you'd like to know?
Yeah, I mean, what did the when was that roughly, and what did the community look like in Calgary at the time?
Actually, believe it or not, we had a few good gay clubs out there. Parkside and Continental, and we had a gay pub underneath CN Hotel in the foyer, not foyer, but sub basement. It was the pub, and that was when beer was 25 cents a glass. So yeah, we didn't mind sharing or buying. Those rates, but today it's another matter, though. Yeah, it wasn't hard for me to come out in Calgary. Being adopted in a white family, I've learned to take responsibilities, to be strong for yourself. I had to learn early because, like I said, I was 16, 17, and my mother was concerned that me being with HIV, I would pass it on to their kids by contact, which was really added pressure, that's for sure, for me. I couch surfed, actually, and no roof over my head to speak of. Well, I mean, couch surfing, but I was in it, a foot away from being on the street, actually. And I just, being raised white, you just plug along and get ahead, go, just do what you have to do, which means I had to get a job, which was, that was hard because I was so young. So my first job there was working at grocery stores as a stocker. It gave me money to buy a bachelor, not buy, but rent a bachelor's apartment, which was small, but it was, I suppose if I had to do it again, I would go live in a bachelor because they're much more larger today than they were back in the day. Yeah, I had no time, no trouble coming out. Where the stress came in or the hurt came in, and me being ignorant on the subject myself, being it what HIV really meant, or what the, I just thought, okay, you have a disease, Peter, rather than a virus. It was a little more comforting to accept that way, that word than virus. Oh dear. Looking back sometimes, today I just think, don't look back, don't look back. But the back is always there. My experiences, my fits, It was hard and I broke down a couple of times, but I sort of lost it. It just, why me sort of thing. And being HIV, I thought, okay, it's a disease, but it's a death sentence too. And I'm really blessed today because I'm a survivor, and there's so many people that I've known that weren't so fortunate. And I didn't know about immunity, your immune system, or how it worked, or but my hands were tied in seeing people pass on. You can only wish the best for them, even in the afterlife. But to lose a friend is hard because you have this, losing friends are hard because you just one less friend that you have. I always thought I was two-spirited. I don't know why I thought that. I felt the feminine side of me and masculine side of me. And yeah, Calgary was no threat to me, even though it's a redneck town today. Mm. But I think, there was tension in the air, I have to say, because of people walking around in psychosis, the marks of their face. And now it's not a pretty sight to look at, and you had to, with your friends, look beyond that. But I'm only one person that I think thought that way. I think Red Calgary was even more. Oh, you're gay, you're fag, you're queer, you're all the derogatory names, only through ignorance again. They knew nothing about what gay meant or being gay meant. It's even though it's you like men, there's a lot more to it than just liking men. But I was strong. I had to do what I had to do. It wasn't easy. I come a long ways. Like I said, now 60, and back then I think I was 31, 32. I don't know. Yeah, HIV, AIDS, I know what to do, when to do it, and what not to do. And, but friends are hard to lose, and, it's like one less friend you have. I can count on my hand how many friends I have that will stand by me if I ask them. So in that sense, it's good. That's today, though. It wasn't back then in the 80s or 79 even. It was... moved around a lot because of that. I didn't want... After I got a foothold with myself, with us having a job and paying rent, I wanted to change. So I had the balls to just pack up and leave and went over to Ontario, Toronto. Had a great time, partied. But again, it's... I was afraid to have sex with men now. And I thought, I don't want to be... I thought you could pass it through your saliva, which you can't. I know it's a blood transfer thing, I think. So I had a good time with myself. I've always been a loner. And I felt safer being on my, keeping to myself rather than having people. People I've lost, I mourned for and went to their funerals. And in all that time, seeing the disease afflict people with not a pretty sight, it's not a pretty sight. I think here we had Dr. He videotaped the cycle of his disease. What's his name?
Dr. Peter?
Yeah, Dr. Peter, that's right. And seeing that, I saw my friends' faces on him because it was exactly the same. Once you hospitalized, then it's... I found once my friends were hospitalized, that was it. There was then palliative care. And this was... they really didn't have a palliative care back in the day. But just seeing the same infliction that Dr. Peters went through, the memory, the shriveling up, and it's not a pretty sight, and it's hard to think. I often think, why not me? Why them? Why? I mean, yeah, I don't know. I think, why them? Why not me? Because I'm a survivor, and I think where I'm blessed is it's in my genes. I believe that my being First Nations is one, I don't look 60, hopefully 50, but I don't know. Once I found out I had quit having sex with men. I like being around them, dance with them, party with them, but I never, I was scared to get involved because, it was hard to say back in the day, I'm HIV. It was very hard, and you had to keep it close to your chest. And in all of those years of trying to stay strong, it worked, but I still think of it as seeing your friends disintegrate, basically, because it was hard. It was, for me, I say it wasn't hard, but it was really a redneck attitude. There's a lot of, a few people that, I'm not the only one that got kicked out of the home because of being HIV. You know, people were fired from their jobs. People, you know, it's almost like it went underground, you know, in silence. And I was the same participant. Silence was my game too. And I thought, who do I talk to about? My friends, I mean, friends of friends, it says you always know. They know, but the stranger, if I were to, I would be petrified to admit that I was HIV because of the backlash. And at one time, Calgary, there were fag beaters in our Central Park. And that's where, well, they sort of came around. It was a nice park with benches and but a lot of fag beating, as they say. And if you looked, like you looked with psychosis, I don't know how that word is, but the baldness, the marks on the body, the tiredness, I think where I'm different, I didn't resign. I wanted to give up. And a lot of people at the time thought it was a death sentence, and they didn't want to survive after that because we didn't know what was ahead after HIV, and when it was AIDS, but. It's all in all, my past is not a pretty sight, that's for sure. Just because I was at Brundage, my next, I don't like, I'm a lot more mature, and I hate to think that I was an idiot back then, but I was pretty naive and pretty scared. Because even though I said, "Why me?" Not, you know, not my friends. But you can't change. I'm sort of lost right now.
It's okay. It's a. It's a lot. It's a lot to talk about.
You never get used to death. Never. You know, First Nations, we believe there's an afterlife. And so I believe in that. Not everybody does, but death is scary. It's just not natural, but it is natural. I mean, you get at the coming of, I hope I had another 20 years in me. But where I'm blessed is because I'm now, it's what, 30, 25, 26, 28 years of HIV. I don't know how, but I'm non-detectable. Which I think today's the antivirals I'm taking, I've been taking for a few years and haven't changed, but you know, I'm happier than happier. I'm happy with that, you know, HIV non-detectable. And I said to my doctor, "What does that mean?" He says, "Well, they can't detect enough of the virus in you." Which I don't understand how that's possible, being diagnosed way back then. And yeah, I just don't know how that's possible. But I accept it, I'm happy. But my happiness has come over the last 10 years that I've had to say, "Peter, relax, relax, relax." It's hard to relax. It's in the back of your mind, HIV, AIDS, what's going to happen next. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it because I'm too scared to think about it still. Because it means what I saw in my friend's passings, what the body goes through. I just don't want to think there, I don't want to go there. But it will happen eventually. And I wrote a will today, not today, but recently, saying that that I be cremated, and also that I have assisted suicide, doctor's assisted death. Is the name for that. So I said that, because I don't want to go through the pain and the agony. You know, my little gray cells, sometimes I forget, but generally I read to keep my memory fresh. And but boy, back then, it was you put a zipper on your mouth. You didn't talk about it when it happens. And so, even strangers I saw with psychosis, and there I thought, God, buddy, you are so brave. I had to say that, because today, if anything came to me of my face, I would stop going out. As much as I'm saying I'm okay, I'm still scared in the back, you know. I don't ponder on it, but I don't know. It's one day, not today. And I always ask for another day. Maybe that's it. My higher powers give me all of that. Another day, another day. But when your friends go, you just, I don't know, why me, why not me? You know, I mean, I was promiscuous, you know. It wasn't hard sometimes to meet men, because I was a pretty boy back then, and I played the part in lots of ways. I don't like to admit that, but yeah, meeting men were okay. Like I said, I was the bottom at the time, and that's how I caught it, you know. No condoms back in the day either. I never thought they were safe, and turned out no, you're not safe. You've got to use condoms today, now, if they're so important. So now I use condoms, but back then I never used condoms. I never gave a thought, actually. I just thought, if the day that I was told I was HIV, I remember just, once I got outside with my dog, I just broke down and cried. I thought, fuck. No, I was at HIV, it's a constant deterioration of the body system, and I thought, how fast, you know. And back in the early 90s, people were carefree, actually. And even back in the 80s, but in the 90s, back in the 80s. And I lived in Toronto from 1980 to 85. Had a great time, partied hardy, and I didn't want to get involved with men because I thought I wasn't the same, or I wasn't perfect anymore. Being HIV, being labeled, I thought this is going to hang over you for the rest of your life. And being labeled, I was scared because Calgary's like a redneck, and if you look gay, some people would yell out of the cars passing by, or at night the fag meetings. And so as much as I was open and okay with it, I saw a lot of conflict, you know, me, it's them against us sort of thing, and it's them that sort of had the upper hand because, you know, I'm HIV. I don't know. I've come a long ways, baby, that's for sure. And we didn't have a support system for being HIV/AIDS. There was no support system. There's no men's places like this, Momentum, so it's studies, or even either gets a support, like talking circle or anything. There's none of that. And so, you just move along, keep it to yourself, and don't think about the end, which sometimes I think, oh my God. I stopped drinking because of that. I think meds and drinking do not go along. And back again, we didn't have antivirals back in the 80s, 70s. So you just had to ride it out because there's no meds that they came up with. And people died really fast because of that. And I think Vancouver was the first place that I knew. Toronto in the 80s, they didn't have they didn't have meds support system, places where we could go to talk about having this virus in us. It would have made a hell of a lot of difference if I could have talked back then about what it meant to be HIV, or, you know, the disruptions it brought to a lot of people. Disruptions, they died, they didn't disrupt them. And everybody was just tight-lipped, even the gay scene was, you know, we saw it. But then when their friends died and my friends died, they couldn't not say anything, you know. I didn't have any support. I mean, I had my friends, but with friends, there's certain, you go so far with them. And my emotional baggage back then, I couldn't, like, why bother them about my emotional baggage, or how upset I am, or how scared I am, or you don't lay that on people, because, you know, I don't know.
So you were really carrying this on your own? You didn't have much support at all?
No, I had to upper lip, and I don't know how I did it, but I did it. I survived. I only wish there was a support system back in the day. I think it would make a hell of a lot of difference. But you didn't, they didn't, we, society didn't. HIV/AIDS was sort of a new virus people were so scared of. Everybody was scared. You know, people lost their jobs, got kicked out of the home like I did. You know, there was a lot of backlash being HIV/AIDS, and that's what made me scared enough to socially not talk about it. But today it's like, it's 2000, I can't believe it's 2000, but 1980, 79, I was looking at 2000. That's for sure. In fact, I didn't think I'd live to that long. I thought, okay, you know, I just didn't think I would be living that long, or this long. And I have, and I'm, you know, I prayed my Creator to still give me the strength to carry on, and I'm still a loner. I can count on my hands how many friends I have. But there are a few, but it's nice to have friends. It's nice to have. In some ways, they're good sound listening board, you know, and today I can mention it to them, and oh God, death is not a pretty sight. I keep thinking that. I don't know. I'm happy I'm strong. I'm happy that I'm not. I don't know. I'm not dead. I'm not in palliative care. I'm not, you know. And my antivirals have been working for the last 10 years. So, you know, I don't question it, but I still cry once in a while because I've lost friends to this disease. And it's just like that, going back, it's not a pretty sight once the body breaks down, the memory goes, the hair goes, the weight goes. And going to a hospital to see your friends, and they didn't have palliative care back then either. They just stuck them. They stuck them on a ward, and it was so hard to go see them in that state. What made me stand by them was because I thought maybe one day when I'm like that, somebody will stand by me. So, but my nature is to care for people, and sometimes I forget about myself in caring for others. It's been so long carrying this virus. Like, okay, I'm undetectable, that's good. But still, in the back of my mind, I thought, God, I hope I go quickly. I don't want to linger on with this disease, a virus. I don't know. The change today, HIV/AIDS is a total turnaround. People now say, okay, there is support systems out here. It's a total turnaround. It's 80s, 70s. They didn't have that. And I think it would have been a hell of a lot better if we would have had a support system or that we could go to, and I'm happy today, but sad in some ways too. So, but I haven't seen death for a lot of years now, and I'm happy. I think I'd break down if I saw. I'm scared to go to palliative care in here in St. Paul's, because there's still people that are, I think, in there because of their immune system isn't working, and palliative care means the end of your days, basically. So I'm scared to go visit people. If I was really strong, I would have just go up there and say, you know, is there anybody I can talk to with people that are HIV, and or get them to talk about it, make them feel okay. I don't know. I'm not that strong. I can't go up to palliative care. I'm scared, actually. It's just one area I don't want to go to, because I guess in my experience of death has not been very positive. It was really hard. I cried and cried and cried, and you know, why me? Why not me? You know. Yeah, I was young. I was insecure in a lot of ways. But you just have to do what you have to do back in the day. Even though you had to sort of, you had to be strong. And where, I don't know how I survived that, because I didn't have anything to draw from, you know, and, boy, oh boy, if you would have known me in my 30s, 40s, good looking, but sort of a basket case in some ways with it, being HIV and, I don't know, count my blessings today, still. I keep seeing, sometimes I see my friends' faces, and I think, oh, I see the marks. It was really traumatic to see that on people. It didn't look natural, it didn't look, you know, like, oh, maybe that's chicken pox or whatever, but AIDS was certainly a hard disease to go through. Or to be, once you have AIDS, it's, HIV is one thing, AIDS is another. And people are surviving longer today. And I'm not a basket case anymore. Back then I was just like, chin up. Carry on, keep your mouth shut, don't talk about me being having a virus in my body and not being able to get it out. And I just thought, okay, it wasn't hard to accept it. Like I just didn't think it was fair. And I thought, where the hell did this virus come from? I didn't know that either. I didn't know how it started. Well, once I found out, my GP asked, are you bottom? I said, yes. I said, do you condoms? I said, no. Who used condoms back then? It was in the, I don't.
So there wasn't much information out there.
No
at the time.
Information. Nowhere I even. I don't know about the information, but I would needed to know, being able to talk about it. Oh, it would have been made a difference, big difference, if I was able to talk about it. You know, I just, someone dying is really, it's hard to watch, hard to be around. And I guess a mixed blessing back then was, if you were HIV, you went quickly. It didn't linger for like years. It was months. Once, you know, the body started breaking down, it's just like your weight goes, your hair loss, and it just, and that goes fast. And if we had the antivirals today, back then, I think a lot of people might have survived. My friends might have survived. Yeah, no information at all about HIV, what it meant or what it, how to define it. In fact, I didn't think HIV, what is that? And I didn't know anything about it, the disease, the virus, whatever. I just had to accept it and keep your mouth shut and carry on, and everything's gonna be okay, but not. Everything was not okay. Oh, I get so mad sometimes that. Yeah, I get mad because there should have been a support system out there. People were, by the hundreds, dying. But it is what it is, I guess, and I can't change the past. I don't know what my future is, but the present and presence, I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm still emotional, I'm glad I am emotional, I'm glad I can cry still. I still think of my friends, and that makes me cry, because it's just not fair, not fair at all. Oh, God. Yeah, they went fast. And so a lot of funerals, too, because of that. But, no, I don't want to be buried. Cremate me and blow me into the wind. But, like I said, I don't know what my future holds with this virus. I just pray that. Well, I always ask for one more day. Always. Yeah. It was a good time back in the 80s. This, you know, party, 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 but you get fucked, you get fucked. You get fucked over being fucked. Oh, that's kind of crude, but I don't know. I didn't think I deserved to be HIV either. So I, you know, I mean, I thought, what harm was I doing? I wasn't doing any harm. It's a sunny day today, and I'm happy that I'm alive. For how long, I don't know, but like I said, if the day comes, I want assisted suicide. And I think that's legal in Canada now. I mean, you have to meet certain criteria, but, you know, certainly don't want to go through the, you know, I have these visions of these scars and people, psychosis, whatever you call it, and it was hard not to stare, to see, but it wasn't a pretty sight. HIV okay, but AIDS, I don't, even today, I don't think it's a pretty sight. Yeah. I'm 60 now. I want to live to another 20 years if I can. I don't know if I can. You know, I just take day by day. And that's my saving grace. It's taking each day for one day at a time. To look forward, to look ahead, I don't know what's ahead. You know, I'm a caregiver today because people need that support. I didn't have it back then, but now I have it today. And I would have given a tooth and nail to have that support back in the 80s and 90s. But it is what it is. And each day forward is another day of living. I'm so grateful that I'm alive, I can breathe, I can do things, I'm independent, and it's nice. Seeing your friends pass on, die, it's just like, it's not right. I think, why me, Lord, or why not me, Lord? You don't see psychosis, whatever, today. People being afflicted with AIDS. I haven't, maybe in palliative, well, I'm scared to go to palliative care. But, I don't know. Is there any questions you want to ask?
Well, do you remember when you first heard about HIV or AIDS?
Once I was diagnosed. But no, I didn't. There's no information out there concerning this virus, what it meant or what to expect. Back in the 80s, no, there was no. I heard it because once I had it and then some of my friends have it. But once my friends had it, they were white too, and they all went quickly. They went so quickly. Within a month, that's how fast it can be. Ravage your body. But, no, I heard it only because I was HIV, and my friends were HIV, but I think everybody was too scared to talk about it. The repercussions of talking of being HIV back then was, you got frowned, people turned their backs on you, basically. But once I heard, first time I heard about it was, it's been so long. I didn't hear about it until I was infected. And I didn't know what to expect except when my friends died. I don't know, two spirits, I believe that we'll be reincarnated into another life, and I hope my friends are happier. You know, I'm not happy, but they've moved on after death. But if I think if I would have heard it earlier in the 80s, 90s, it would have built a little more confidence in me. because I was insecure, because I thought, fuck, I have this disease, this virus, what's going to happen? So, if there was a support system back then, that there was just, it being a saving grace, you know, just to let go of that baggage. People went so quickly, it was like, here, San Francisco was another city that got ravaged early, and, today's good, a good day, you know, I'm not relatively fair, sane and all that, but, that's my story. It's sort of a collage of incidences that happened in my life that back then I couldn't really talk about it or really get it up, you know. There's a lot of times I cried myself to sleep because I was so scared, you know, and I thought, I was young, and my friends were young. It's not fair. They're young. They still have a whole life, but once they got it, it's HIV/AIDS, it was downhill. You know, so many people died so early in their age. My friends included. So, I don't know what else to say about that.
When did you get to Vancouver?
I first came here in 80. I came here in Expo 86. I moved back from Toronto to here and made good money and worked in BC Pavilion as a waiter. At 86, and I moved to Hawaii after that for a few years. My blessing is I can blend in societies where the white is not always present. Being white, as in Hawaii, the dark skin, the Philippines, the dark skin. So it was nice that I could blend in somewhere because I just didn't want to stand out. I don't want to stand out, but, well, today I do, but I think, I didn't want to stand out then, that's for sure. I just take a deep sigh and I say, okay, Peter, it's okay, everything's going to be okay. And everything is okay. A little hard with my companions failing, but I just think, fuck, this next person's gonna go on me. He's got almost like a Parkinson's disease, and he wants to stay at home as long as he can, and I want him to stay at home, but I'm afraid he's gonna die. It's a deterioration. He's not getting better. I get tired of people dying on me. It's just, you don't accept those, something like that. Life is not always fair. And if I wish I knew that back then. Life wasn't fair. It was hard on me because it was. That's why I left Calgary, because it's a redneck town. Even though I came out and I was still living at home, went sneaking out to the gay bars, and I lived in suburbia, and I have six siblings, and today, unfortunately, today, my mother, she's passed on, but she never did accept that. She was the one that said, "I want you out." Once I told him, HIV, you have to go. Oh, that was, I thought. You know, I totally believe back then, if I was their blood, they wouldn't have said that. They would have gave me the support or some of support, but there was no emote. If you're born of the blood with, there's a connection, there's a bond automatically between parent and child. I didn't have that, you know. My dad was a blessing. He supported me. He said, "Leave the boy alone." My mother would just say, she'd always say she was afraid of me being gay. She didn't know anything about it, and she didn't think it was natural. No, I just thought, "Fuck you." God rest her soul, but she was hard on me. You know, I was a, yeah. I don't know why, but yeah, she wasn't hard on her kids. And if anybody left home back then, it was to go to university. So I moved out once you got to university, but I was way too young, and I don't know how I survived. I got a job, that's how I survived, but yeah. Count my blessings today.
Yeah, it sounds like there was a tremendous amount of stigma back then.
Good word, there was. People didn't want to talk about it. It was present, it was there. And people had this image of, I don't know, it scared them. You know, being, "Oh, he's age, he's going to pass it on, he's gonna, you know, don't touch him." And ignorance, the stigma was ignorance because nobody knew much about it, it's a virus, or, you know. Anyway, yeah. I didn't know much about it. I knew I had it, and I thought, keep your mouth shut and just carry on. But when your friends get part of your life cycle, it's another matter. Really, it's I still give them thought today, and I still sometimes cry because they're so young. So young. 20s, early 30s. You know, and I just can't believe how fast it went. How fast it just, yeah, a lot of people died. A lot. So I wasn't the only one afflicted by it, or affected by it. It was out there, but they didn't want to talk about it. They were scared. And people would shun you. Actually, literally, like, "Fuck off. Don't come near me." You know, like, ignorance. Ignorance. That's what stigma was.
And was that within the gay community as well?
Actually, that's a good question. I would say yes. Being gay, we never talked about it. We never brought it up as a conversation, you know. I think it didn't talk about people's today, like personalities today, just. No, it was as there was an ignorance on the whole area, and people couldn't get beyond the physical appearance. You know, it's what you look like that. matter. Yeah. Facts. Yeah, stigma, good word. There was plenty of that. And a gay thing, too, because we were sort of uptight with ourselves as well, uptight about this disease. It was a new disease. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted to talk about it in some ways. Until they started dying, you had to talk about it. You couldn't escape that. But, yeah.
Do you think that your indigenous identity impacted your experience of the epidemic in any ways?
Yes. I don't know. I wasn't raised Aboriginal or First Nations, and my parents never really encouraged me to go that route. So I didn't. I always thought, okay, I'm different. I'm not the same color, but I'm just as strong as my brothers and sisters. And never went to university, though. But yeah, and being Indigenous, I believe my higher power is my saving grace. And genetically, I think it's in the genes too that Aboriginals they have. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not. I never asked an Aboriginal. But I think, you know, just we're a stronger breed genetically, we're, you know. Because I've had this disease for almost 30 years, and I just think, okay, yeah, I've come a long ways. You know, I'm not as insecure. And there are services out there today, which I'm actually noticed that wouldn't mind being part of. I think coming here, I thought, Peter, you've really not talked about your feelings to anybody about death, what it meant to you, what it looked like, or and I thought it's good to know there are more support systems out there, because I didn't know there was that many, this is first time talking about it, you know, and like I said, I've always been alone, just kept to myself. But I didn't talk about it being when I was labeled, when I was diagnosed. I just still afraid to talk about it. It was just a mental death sentence, and people saw it that way. And it was just sort of in your face, you know. Between, I don't know, 85 to 94, so many people went. You know, so many. So I think genetically I'm a stronger pool as far as longevity, I like to think. I don't know if that's true, but to be Indigenous, I don't really know what that means, because I really didn't partake in. I mean, I went to actually today, I can't say that, but today I've gone to a few sweats, and the way they interpret. Oh, it's an honor to go through that, because it's just, they cover you, they make a covering, and they make a fire pit, and they bring hot rocks into it, and you pour the water over them, and you say, for me, I just say, I'm alive, and so it's very. Yeah, Aboriginally, that system was, they thought you're going in your mother's womb. That's what the covering is about. and the rocks were your grandfather rock, grandmother rock. So there was association with rocks, even with the sweat. It's quite, you walk out delirious because it gets so hot, but it feels good. It feels great. So I've been to a couple of ceremonies like that, but I've never been to a powwow, or I don't have any Native friends, and I don't know why that is. I just, yeah, it is. I buy my pot on the east side of the city. So when I go there and I see my kind, my brothers or whatever, doing not so good, I just think, Peter, you are so lucky. I don't know how lucky this is, but I feel lucky that I'm alive today. You know, but seeing it on the east side, it's drug addictive, and it's First Nations always first one to get hit around it because it's introduced to them, and I don't know. I don't want to be that type of Native, that's for sure, or Aboriginal. I'm proud that I am, because I'm not the same as everybody else. But I wish back in the day the Calgary Stampede was, you had Six Nations, RC, there are Six Nations, and they parade down in the parade, and they camped on the camping grounds in stadium, and built their teepees, had their horses. It was quite something. But being Indigenous, it just means to me that that I'm different, and I'm I have more energy in me some ways, but it feels good to be different. I'm glad I'm not like everybody else. I'm glad I'm not active, forgive me, but I'm glad I'm not white. Even though there sometimes is a difference, but I think the difference for me is I have a few blessings blessing me, I don't know what to say with Indigenous, because I've never been raised that way. I know I am Indigenous, of course, but being adopted, like I was, you didn't see a lot of Natives in white society, in suburbia, you know. You just didn't see it. Either they lived on the reserves, big reserves back in Alberta. And I went to reserve once, and I was invited into a home once, and it was trashed. And the parents were in the living room drinking, and I thought, this type of Native is not me, and I don't want to be on the reserve, God forbid. Open door policy on the reserve sometimes if you have the liquor. I knew what I didn't want to be as being Aboriginal. I didn't want to be like them, like, you know, the drunks. It's hard for me because they're representing my race. You know, people see these signs and say, oh, the Natives, that, you know. There's a certain I won't say stigma, but there's a certain difference between being white and being Aboriginal, and the sometimes the tension that goes along with it. I don't know, they see drunken Indians in the side, and that's, you just accept it, that's the way they are, right? So sometimes I'm fighting as I'm not fighting, but I can see that, you know, you take someone on the side, I bet that I can say, they would say, oh, that's the way they are. But no, I just plow on, and, you know, thank God I'm alive today. I really am thankful.
Do you have any recollections of what the medical response looked like early on?
Once I was diagnosed, that was it. You know, I can't answer that.
If your story doesn't relate to that, that's totally fine. But when you were diagnosed, was the doctor like gentle or understanding, for instance, or was
No. My GP was da 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 da, but he was there's no emotional connection with my GP today. I can talk to you, but back then the doctor said, this is the way it is, this is where you are, and you're just going to have to live with it. And no compassion, you know, no support, no... I mean, people were just that way back in the day. But, you know, they kept everything close to their chest, you know, in my speaking. They couldn't... Once it was out, people saw people with AIDS. I think people were scared back then. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be like them. I don't want to do that. You know, just being gay was. I don't know. Being gay in Calgary was. It was there, but not there, sort of thing. But I mean, we had a nice, great little pub, and we had some good dance clubs, and so it was present. And I was, you know, jumped into that scene. Never looked back. No regret. Well, no regrets.
A related question, any memories of governmental or government responses early on?
I have a story there. Oops. I had a breakdown in 82 in Toronto, so much that I was depressed and I was put in Foothills Hospital in the psych ward, and I really didn't do much, you know. There were times I was hard on myself. I think having a nervous breakdown. Well, I wouldn't say nervous breakdown. I was depressed. So depressed. And they put me in a psych ward for observation, and I'm sort of lost what to say now.
That's okay. Were you aware of any community responses that were going on around the epidemic, like activism, for instance?
Right. No, there was no activism. There was no people saying, here we are, you know, this is where we are. There's no... there's none of that. My friends weren't part of that. If there was, I wasn't aware of it because I didn't think. Yeah, there's no activism back in the 80s, 90s.
How do you think the epidemic changed the gay community? Like looking at it as a whole.
In the community?
Yeah.
I think today there's support there. There's support for people that are like myself with HIV. And it's not so scary to talk about, you know. I don't know if people accept it, but it's just part of the fabric. And I think today is it's like night and day between when I first came out and the support now. Today, I wish the support, like all these, were back then, and none of this, no marches, no. Calling out what HIV/AIDS is about, no activism at all. And today it's different. There's people talk about it, and it's not so bad talking about it. And people are more aware of it, I guess, today. They didn't play the head in the sand bit. So I'm glad. There's choices out there that I could go to, which I'll take on if,
And so you didn't get involved with any organizations like
No.
Positive Living or?
Yeah, no. I sort of keep to myself in a lot of ways. But I mean, it's just, to be honest, I didn't know much about how many choices we have. I mean, AIDS Vancouver was around for a long time, but I never got involved in each organization. Why, I don't... I don't know why, but I still keep to myself. I accept it, and it'd be nice to once in a while talk about it, that's for sure. But I don't have time to think about it today. You know, this is being overthinked, dissected. And I just, I'm lost.
Has the epidemic changed the community in any other ways that you can think of? Besides there being more support now?
Well, there's support, there's activism now, today, there's confidence, AIDS time. My GP, Dr. Sestak, was one of the first pioneers in going to conferences on HIV/AIDS. And I guess that was around, I've been with him, I was with him 20 years, 15 years that I've been here. I've been so lucky I have a GP. God forbid, not having one to walk in clinics, I'd like, take this. No real compassion about what you're going through. It's like, take this. So, but no, today it's another ball game. People are just are different. People are, they're aware of it, and it's not so bad being aware of it. You know, being aware of it, that they're not so uptight about it. You know, if you HIV, okay. It's still a virus people don't understand in some ways. Emotional baggage that goes with it, for one. And experiences around it, for another. But no, I'm just glad there are now organizations that I can turn to and say, this is my story. This is the first time I ever talked about it with you. Always, it's not easy to talk about with just anybody. Like, I wouldn't put that on anybody. My emotional baggage, you know, onto someone else. But I'm glad there are organizations out there. It makes me feel a little more relaxed with myself, knowing that it's, people are aware of it, people are, you know, being gay is not such a bad thing, you know. Back in the day, being gay, you must get HIV AIDS, and you're just total turnaround today. People are not accepting, they're aware of it. And it's not so much derogatory towards it. Like, yeah, people were so uptight back then. So, and we had no support system. So we went through what we went through. But a lot of people didn't make it. And a lot of people died, a lot. Too many in my books, but I'm thankful today for my life, that I'm alive, you know. In some ways I celebrate that, because I just, like I said, I can't think about being HIV. I just, like, I know I use condoms, that's part of the now, but I don't know. These support systems are great to talk about it, but outside of these support systems, I don't think people really people don't talk about HIV/AIDS here, or not here, but I don't hear about it, about people talking about it, or with these organizations, of course, it's part of it, but I think in general public, people don't talk about HIV/AIDS today even. Yeah, I think, I don't know if they know what it means or what, well, of course they know what it means, but anyways, it's sort of when the HIV, it's something almost like,
there's maybe still some stigma around HIV out there.
There is, to be honest, and I don't want to say that, but there is, because I don't know what it is. Society has, I don't know if they're aware of where they're going or what's going on, and it's still sometimes it's not redneck, but there's still people you don't talk about it. It's not brought up. And you don't bring it up in general conversations, certainly. And people don't want to hear about it sometimes. And not a lot, not all, but I think if I go out in suburbia and tell them I'm HIV, I think, I don't know, I'd be scared to sort of do that, because it's, suburbia has a certain mindset all its own, and to say, oh, I'm HIV, that would throw a pebble in the pond, a lot of ripples for that one. So I still think it's, yeah.
Well, based on your experience as a long-term survivor, do you have any advice for future generations who maybe have not experienced
the
epidemic?
Use a condom. Talk about it. Yeah. Like, to be honest, I never knew there were so many agencies out there. But if there is, get out and talk about it. Or find a support system if you can. Because I think today people are still, there are lonely people out there with carrying this disease. But my advice is just use the support system that's out there if you can, and be responsible sexually. But yeah.
Any advice for people that might be newly diagnosed?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. That's good. Don't think it's a death sentence. You know, it's not a death sentence. Well, yes and no, but if you're young and you're HIV positive, seek out support. It's kind of, yeah. The support is everything. You know, it can make you or break you, you know. So yeah, and again, use condoms. That's a no-brainer in that one. But don't think you're the only one. Another thing, if you're diagnosed, you're not the only one. There are a lot of people out there that are diagnosed, and I don't know. Yeah, I can't say. My advice to them is just seek out support in the community, because times are different today, and you can't actually go out and seek support and not be scared about it. It's hard not to say don't be scared, because it is scary sometimes. You know, it's a big H, it's a big I, it's a big V. But don't be scared. Try not to be scared, and use the support system out there if you can. That's my advice.
Great. I think that's my kind of the end of my more formal questions. We always like to ask at the end, if there's anything that you wanted to discuss that we didn't cover in our questions or in our initial conversation, or if there was anything that you wanted to expand upon.
To be honest, no. There isn't. One area is family, because I was kicked out early, and it'd be nice to talk more about the family and what I went through with them. And yeah, like I said, my mother was always hard on me, and she was, ours was like cat and dog. But family is important, really is. If you can have that support in your family, you've got it made, actually. Because family is everything. Family is where it starts. And how it expands, and acceptance is a big thing, you know. It's sort of, people aren't as scared to talk about it, and just enjoy life for what it is. Take responsibility, be safe, and keep your head up, you know. I can't say don't be scared because it can be scary. Even today. If you're young, young today, I think, I don't know. I don't hear too many straight people having AIDS, so I don't. It's always in the gay scene, but I still think. Yeah, you don't. Yeah, I lost my train of thought there.
I mean, we do know that young gay guys are still disproportionately getting HIV.
It's not as yes, that's true, but it's not as many. The difference, and people aren't dying like a month from now, 2 months from now. So there's antivirus out there that's for me, I've been on for a good 10, 15 years now, that saved my butt, I think. I'm really blessed because I don't know how it's possible that can be undetectable. I really don't know because I just don't know how that works. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
It is. And it's, you don't think it's a death sentence anymore. Back in the day, of course, today I was, I couldn't look to a future because I didn't know if I had a future. And today, I mean, I look ahead and thinking, I want to actually jump into some of these communities' support systems and see where it goes. Because I really, not so much avoided, but I didn't go to any of them. I mean, I know AIDS Vancouver, they had an office here on, Butte Street. Davian Butte, they have HIV upstairs in them. There's a building on Butte Street that AIDS Vancouver used to be in.
I think that's where Community is now, maybe. Another clinic and queer organization.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But I never jumped into any of these organizations. Why? I don't know. One, I didn't seek them out. But now that I'm aware that they're out there, I just might turn around and say, talk about it or be part of something, with this virus, with this the whole thought of being HIV. I think if I can make a difference, that being part of something like this, then I think I feel a lot more relaxed knowing that I participated in an organization around this disease. I'll look up through a couple of them, and I mean, I see one general HIV support resources. Mm-hmm. I know that Positive Living I might go to, but I'm just glad there's agencies out there actually giving the support. Like times have turned around totally from the 80s, early 70s, 90s, even from today. It's like night and day almost. With one support to the, today it's not so, well, I wouldn't talk about it to anybody, but you can talk about it. And I didn't have that back then. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. And I didn't know any of it. I mean, there were gay clubs, gay bars, so I don't know if there's any support systems back then. Actually, I was pretty scared in a lot of ways. Not having a future, that's what I was scared about. I didn't have a future. I didn't dare to look ahead or think, just stay the status quo, keep your head up, and do your own thing. And I'm alive today and I'm so thankful. It's a long way, a long road, that's for sure, for me, and that's why I think some of these agencies out there, I wouldn't mind looking up, but, yeah.
Well, unless you have anything else to add, you're welcome to take a moment to think about that.
Okay.
But if not, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and contributing to this project.
Like I said, if it can help, then I'm not so scared about being part of that. So yes, I appreciate you being listening to me, and to actually have someone listen to you about this disease and the effects from it. So I thank you for being there for me.
Oh, of course, yeah.
No.
That's my pleasure.
Certainly not used to it, but I'm glad there are not the only, you're not the only one that I can turn to. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Thank you. I'm just gonna stop the recording.
Okay, sure.